I'd been walking for 10 days to Padam, the central village of Zanskar. It had been a good harvest, and the barley crop was being threshed, trampled by oxen, round and round. Even by Himalayan standards, this was like stepping back in time. Everyone takes part in the harvesting, whatever their age and whatever their position in society. I'm now on a mission which is quite extraordinary because I'm about to pay a call on the King of Padam. This monarchy has been going for about 150 years and the present king, Punchok Dawa, I think is the 8th or 9th in his family to hold the title. I've had the house pointed out to me. I can see it ahead. Looks very much like all the other houses built of mud bricks with animals in the courtyard. But one thing that does make it special, I can see on the door is written in great big crayon scroll the word King. Well, let's see if the King is in residence. Hello? Anybody at home? Let me go inside. Maybe they haven't heard me. Hello? Somebody is here. The palace is not quite empty. Several rooms off this main courtyard with rough wooden doors held closed by wooden pegs. And I can see open to the roof where there are stacks of animal fodder for the coming winter. Mr. Dawa? Hello? 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 Dulay, dulay. I'm looking for Mr. Punchok Dawa, the king.
No.
He's not here.
In the fields.
In the fields?
Yes.
Will he be back later?
Yes.
The king is in the fields.
I'll in the fields.
Okay, I'll come back later.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Yes. Sorry to disturb you.
My grandfather came from Nerak. There is also a small kingdom in Leh, Nerak. He settled here, my grandfather. And since then we are living now maybe more than 100 years.
In this house?
In this house, yes.
The same house,
yes,
more than 100 years.
Yes.
What are the duties of the king?
As a king, I have no ceremonial, no functions, nothing. And but now I am a government official. Yeah, like I am a teacher.
But you don't have a crown.
No, I don't.
Well, tell me a little about your life in Padam, because the one thing that everybody knows about Zanskar is that it has the coldest winters.
Yes.
How do you survive those 8 or 9 months of down to 40 degrees below zero?
Yes, very hard. Zanskari life is very hard.
What fuel do you use for the stoves?
Now we have, we get from mountain, and some kind of bush and roots. We now use kerosene oil and electricity also.
You also use dung, don't you? Dried
dung,
animal
dung. Also, yeah, we use as fuel, dung.
I've noticed that every house has a great big pile of dung stacked up, drying. Now, I know that great changes are happening in Zanskar, and the first of these changes was 15 years ago when the road came. How has life changed?
Before, there was no foreigners, visitors, and now, after opening the road, now there are many tourists, visitors. Now people, they also often go to Kargil and visit many other places. It is bad, yes. Our the traditional customs, they should be protected for the future.
Roads are now a fact of life. I wanted to find out how things have changed as a result and how ordinary Ladakhis feel about the new versus the old. From his position as a government scientist in Leh, Mohammed Dean watched it all happen.
Before Ladakh was connected by roads, The whole Ladakh was completely self-sufficient in respect of wheat, barley, meat, milk, butter, vegetables, wool. But then whenever there was a drought or there was a problem in the irrigation facilities, there used to be some sort of starvation. But after opening of the roads, that problem completely got solved, because through the roads some quantity of rice and wheat start coming in. But at the same time, the population of Ladakh also got changed, mostly because the India and Chinese relation was not good, so there was a lot of army. And then in 1974, Ladakh was open for tourism and a lot of tourists came. A lot of people came to handle the tourists. And with this increase in the population, a lot of food came from outside the Ladakh district.
The outside food did put an end to famine, but it also introduced the principle of government subsidies, especially on rice, sugar and wheat flour. The effect on local farming was immediate and drastic.
It's a very terrible situation. As I said, you know, we were self-sufficient for butter in 1960s. Now, annually, we get butter more than worth 20 million rupees every year. It's a big amount we are really sending out for purchase of butter. Whereas there's a lot of scope itself in Ladakh to produce the butter. The traditional system is good, but then we'll have to really rethink about economic use of the land. Now, I personally have a feeling that some of the land at present should be used for production of barley and wheat, but most part of the land should be really used for cash crop. The land should bring a lot of money to the people. This can happen by two ways. First is, we have to stop somewhere the subsidy food coming into Ladakh. Second is, we have to introduce some new crops and cash crops like vegetables, seed production, hops. There's so many ways probably we can make the agriculture farming a very economical one.
The sweets is very old in Ladakh.
Ladakhi,
yeah,
sweets.
Ladakhi sweets. Carrot is also local.
The carrots?
Carrots, yeah.
So a lot of your garden is
local,
indigenous varieties.
Yeah. Onions.
Onions.
Very local.
And they all seem to be doing very well.
I'm an organic gardener. I don't use chemical fertilizers. Local manure is very strong one.
So
the poultry farm.
You get manure from a local poultry farm?
Yeah, poultry farm, yeah.
And what else do you use on this
and
garden?
And we use our own manure, cattle manure.
Cattle manure?
Yeah, and manure from the latrine.
Manure from the latrine?
Yeah.
And all that goes to produce this bumper crop?
Yeah.
We're now coming to a second greenhouse.
Yeah, with the polythene covered here.
The roof is also polythene?
Yeah.
Spread over a network of timber?
The walls are double.
Double walls?
Yeah, and straw between.
With straw between,
yeah.
Good insulation,
yeah, insulation,
and the greenhouse is sloping southwards to catch the best of the sunshine.
Yeah.
What do you grow here?
Mostly in summer I grow some carrots, then dahlia flowers.
Carrots, dahlias,
strawberries,
and
brinjals, eggplant.
Eggplants,
yeah.
Yes.
And in winter I grow green vegetables.
Green
like
vegetables
spinach.
In winter?
Yeah, coriander.
Yes?
Yeah, it's whole winter.
So you get a crop in winter as well
no,
as in summer?
No, I take two, three crops in winter.
Two or three crops?
Yeah.
In winter, the outside temperature is many degrees below
zero. Yeah.
What's the temperature inside the greenhouse?
Inside the minimum is inside up to minus 10.
Only minus 10?
Only minus 10. And also, from this year, we are growing mushroom here.
mushrooms.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen any of those.
Yeah, I will show you.
Yes, please, come and take me and show me your mushrooms.
Asparagus.
And asparagus
Cindy's,
too.
Yeah.
For centuries, the great caravan route from Leh to Yarkand in Chinese Turkestan used to approach the border up the great valley of the Nubra River at India's northernmost tip. And I'm walking up that valley now, a vast desert floor. On my left, the Nubra River, muddy brown, surging its way to join the Shayok River, which joins the Indus River, which flows eventually into the Arabian Sea. But here, at over 11,000 feet, I've left behind the last village, Panamik, the northernmost settlement in India, and I'm heading towards both the Pakistan and the Chinese border, because this is where all three frontiers meet. There's a track up this valley used by army vehicles heading up to defend the Pakistan border. I'm not walking along that track because this is a sensitive area, as you can imagine. Foreigners aren't allowed here, and if they catch me, I'll be in big trouble. Ahead of me, the main valley leads to Pakistan, and to my right, a great side valley is opening up, and this is the route over the Karakoram Pass and into China. Closed by the Chinese in 1949 at the time of the Communist Revolution and never been opened since. Army truck coming, and I'm closer to the road than I thought. Well, I'm going to settle down behind this rock and keep my head down. Oh God, there are two of them.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello.
What?
I'm going that way.
You coming from here?
From Panamik.
Panamik, hello. Yeah, photo shoot my
here. What are you talking? No, thank you. I'm walking.
No, what are you talking?
This is a tape recorder.
Huh? What is being through?
Yes.
Yeah, talk.
Hello.
You come together with me a photo.
Would you want a photo?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's have a photo.
Listen.
Well, that was unexpected. Instead of arresting me, the soldiers all lined up to have their photo taken. One of them even saluting. Major Topo!
What are you problem?
I've caught you up!
What are your problem?
What are you doing here?
No, I don't know. My car is stopped here.
Why have you stopped?
It's about my vehicle is defect.
What?
Defect.
Defect?
Yeah.
Oh, what's the problem?
No.
No matter?
What are your legs?
Oh, all right then.
It's my...
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you get it fixed.
Your way is to where?
Yeah. I'm going that way.
Where?
Well, I'm going to find some water, actually. Some drinking water.
Hello.
Oh,
thank you. Thank you very much. Huh? All the children are putting the microphone to their ears.
You come with me?
Well, your lorry isn't working.
No.
It has a breakdown.
No, I am going to Kasha.
Oh, you're going to Kasha?
Yeah. Are you coming with me?
No. I'm going to find some water. I think I can see a stream over there. Okay?
Okay, sir.
Major Topo!
okay.
Bye-bye. Julie. Goodbye, Major Topo.
Thank you.
Great of luck.
Thank you. Goodbye. I did go a little further, though not with Major Topo and his boys, until I reached a point in the valley where the river, the track and a great rock face all came together, a pinch point. The track sandwiched between the river and the rock face, and at the narrowest point was an army checkpost. That was it, the end of my northbound journey towards the Chinese border. They were very polite about it. They said I wasn't supposed to be there. There was a truck going back to Panamik, and I was firmly put on the back of that truck. Abdul Rahim Khwaja, I'm holding in my hand a British passport dated 1936, belonging to your
grandfather, yes?
Not grandfather, my father's elder brother, you may say my...
Your uncle.
Uncle,
your
yeah,
Your father's
exactly.
elder brother.
Exactly.
Now, looking at the photograph, mm-hmm. he seems a remarkable Victorian sort of man. How did he come to have a British passport issued in Kashgar, in China?
My father told me that he had gone to Yarkand, basically for trading purposes, because he knew the language. And they wanted to find out a man from Indian side who could look after the interests of the Indian traders. They used to have a lot of horses, mules, and donkeys.
Any camels?
Camel, I would say, the first time when camel came in, it was 1937. One fine morning, I heard somebody that camels have come into Ladakh. So I immediately got up, you know, out of my bed, and we rushed to the place, one of the sarais, and I found the camels for the first time in my life in 1937.
And this would have been a Bactrian camel, wouldn't it?
The
two-humped one.
Two-humped one, yes, exactly.
So as one of these caravans was moving out of Leh, bound for Yarkand, what kind of a journey would they expect ahead of them?
You had good horses, and the weather was favorable. In summer, you could travel a maximum of 16 to 20 days, maximum. Otherwise, it will take you about a month.
And, I see, in winter, for instance, it would take a month.
Yeah. If they were caught up in bad weather, I've seen ladies and old people, you know, their children and frostbitten and all sort of things, you know.
So it was a pretty dangerous and
very
hazardous
dangerous.
Journey.
Yeah.
Did people often die on that journey?
And even I heard stories from my father who said that if there were small children or old ladies who couldn't march with the caravan, they would just, when they were about to die, they would not bother to halt and take care of him. They would just leave them there. They would always travel with the shrouds, with a pair of shrouds, whatever it is, you know. And just in case they were really not able to march, then they would put the shroud with them and then leave it there.
What an extraordinary
way to go. Under
a
rock or something. And when I went into that area later in life, I found some of the, you know, dead bodies over there.
Under the skeletons.
You didn't. Yeah, and the
human shrouds.
Human skeletons. Human skeletons.
Of people
they were as fresh as if they had died the previous day.
My goodness. And what were the goods that they transported?
No, they
what
would,
did your family bring from China?
They would bring carpets, silk, and all sort of, you know, clothing, padded clothes.
Yes.
That they used to use in Yarkand. And most of the Ladakhis during those days, you would find clad in Ladakh Yarkandi dress also.
Really?
Yeah. And then charas. Charas means this... what?
Cannabis.
Cannabis?
Yeah. That is a very, very major item on which the government had a very special officer here. They had a charas officer who used to check the amount of charas that was being brought by these caravans here.
So this was a legal trade in cannabis?
Yeah, it was a legal trade.
It was under government control. You see the SP residence here, now the place where the SP lives, superintendent of police lives, it is called the charas office, that means the cannabis office, you see. The officer used to live in that, you see.
Really?
So it is under control of the British government, you see.
Have you seen the church over there, Moravian Church?
The Moravian Church,
Moravian
yes,
church
I have indeed.
Here in
yes.
Leh.
Yes.
Next to that, we used to have a godown where they used to put all the charas.
That's a warehouse, isn't it?
Warehouses where they would take the charas from the people and put them there under their control.
The last remaining link with those caravans are a dozen or so Bactrian camels living out their days in the sand dunes around the mouth of the Nubra Valley. One of their owners told me that a female camel in good condition is worth £400. That's the equivalent of 9 horses or 45 sheep. The male's not quite so valuable, about £300.
Two opposite forces are now pulling on Ladakh, its age-old spiritual connections with the Dalai Lama and Tibet, and its increasingly powerful links with the rest of India. As India has worked towards its dream of becoming a modern Western state, so Ladakhis have found that even from their first day at school, their own culture is being chucked aside.
You had a complete mix of languages. So Ladakhi had no place in these schools. It was started in Urdu, the state language of Kashmir. You know, everything was taught in Urdu to six-year-old Ladakhi who had spoken nothing but Ladakhi and whose parents do not speak anything but Ladakhi. And then what they are taught had nothing, no relevance at all to their lives. So they would be taught about mangoes, about monsoon rains, about elephants. And all these, you know, made Ladakhis feel that they are something odd. Not that the system has some defect and they have to change it. And when you are successful in doing that, intentionally or unintentionally, the rest of the changes happen automatically, themselves, you know.
Now, if we say, talk about a young boy going in a jeans, one has to see why he is wearing a jeans. The most of the people, you know, think Western influence. But things are changing. Population is increasing. Things are becoming limited and more expensive, which is not affordable for a local person. If you take a case of wearing a Ladakhi goncha, a woolen goncha, which is a traditional, cultural, everything, it is becoming unaffordable for a common person. And the things which are coming from Delhi, Bombay, now terricot, terrilene, terry wool, that becomes much cheaper. Now, it is the thing of survival, you know. One has to wear this clothes.
And so Ding Han and before him Sonam Wangchuk have quite different views on which way Ladakh should be going. Of course, one solution would be to promote traditional skills, such as weaving, as a cash crop. And if tourists come and buy the rugs and shawls, so much the better. Sonam Wangchuk believes that far from undermining Ladakhi culture, tourists could actually be the key to preserving it.
Having tourism here, and luckily having the more sensitive tourists here, who saw the simple lifestyle as something they should have in the West. And then Ladakhis started questioning the Indian officials who would otherwise consider every simple Ladakhi as poor and backward. So it has been a very powerful educating tool, this international exposure. I think after that, Ladakhis have, you know, started respecting their own lifestyle, their own dress, their own language, their own culture much more. And there, you can say now there is a totally different wave in Ladakh of self-esteem and taking pride in being Ladakhi. And you might not find as many people in Ladakhi long dress as you might have found in 1950, but that's the outside appearance. If you look into the hearts of the people, I think today you'll find more people, maybe not in Ladakhi dress, but with much more respect for Ladakh inside their hearts. There will be winds of change always. And what we should do, I think, is not to stop them, or we can't even, you know, we can't stop tourism, we can't stop military, we might not be able to stop television. In the face of that reality, what I think is we must have a very strong foundation in the schools. Then we are strengthening the roots of the people, you know. Then whatever winds blow, it won't shake them. That is what my solution is to make the people so much strong and mature in wisdom and in self-confidence that whatever winds that may blow will not shake them.
If one says we should not have the television satellite link with the rest of the world, how far we are going to be kept in isolation? One thing we have to remember, we are living in the same world. And the world around us is developing in a very fast manner. And if we are left out, a day will come, that's my thinking, that Ladakh will be a museum for rest of the world, which I don't believe. Tomorrow somebody can say, okay, because Ladakh has to preserve its culture and tradition, that's why one should not use vaccination for our children. If that's the thinking, I'm sorry to say that there's a very wrong thinking. Otherwise, we will be left out and we will be a museum piece. That's all.
A museum piece. I wouldn't wish that on the Ladakhis. At least, I don't think so. But the idea of preserving old Ladakh for people like me to go and enjoy is horribly tempting. It's an attitude that has destroyed more places and societies than I care to imagine. Dean Khan, for one, is keen to nip it in the bud.
Ladakhis should not be told what is good and what is bad for them. They know much better than anybody else. Whatever is wrong, we should tell it is wrong on their face. Not to be so polite, always. And one thing is very clear, we should not allow anybody to interfere in our own way of living, our customs, tradition. Nobody is capable of teaching us how we should live, how we should eat, and how we should behave. We are the best judge ourselves than any outsider.